Hey guys, welcome back to Technically Surveyed. I'm Sincere.
And I'm Vale.
During today's show, instead of discussing one topic, we'll be talking about the latest events in technology, including a tech giant, Airbnb, a little bit about the green revolution, and some of virtual reality.
Yeah, so Airbnb is IPOing this year. So, I mean, for those of you who don't know what IPO means, essentially, they're going public. So this was a private company, and now you'll be able to buy stocks and share in their success.
Nice. So do you know what their stocks are going for?
Stocks fluctuate. So, I mean, I could give a number, but by the time you hear, it'll be different.
Yeah.
So just, you know, tune into wherever you buy your stocks. But yeah, I mean, this is big news because they have an opportunity to become a unicorn.
A tech unicorn?
A big, pretty unicorn, yeah.
Okay, so what would you describe as, how would you describe, shall I say, a unicorn?
So a unicorn is a startup that is valued over $1 billion.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, but would you say that they're really valued at over $1 billion, especially considering how COVID has affected the company as a whole?
I think so. So, you know, typically when you think about Airbnb, you think about traveling overseas, you get this nice big fancy home, you know, all to yourself instead of like a five-star hotel, you know. But since the pandemic, since then, they kind of pivoted. So now they're focusing more on domestic traveling.
So, that's smart.
Yeah. You know, so you can go down the street and find Airbnb now.
Right. So what's happening with their, you know, their IPO? I know that, you know, they took a large hit because of COVID. But
yeah. So before the pandemic, they were valued at around $30 billion, which is an insane amount of money.
Right.
And now they're just valued at $18
billion. So, oh, wow.
I mean, yeah, it's a huge loss, but it's like, can you really even call that a loss? You know, you're still a unicorn. You're still valued at over $1 billion.
Right.
So, and then, you know, they're private.
So, considering the time frame, once they go public, do you think that will really make much of a difference? You know?
I don't. So as far as my understanding right now, you know, there's three founders. And from my sources, one guy, the CEO, owns about 15%.
Correct.
And the other two, his business partners, own about 14.2%. And once they go public, they're still going to hold on to about 13%. Of the company. So
that's not bad.
Yeah, I think that's really good because, you know, with startups, a lot of times what you see is people trading, you know, like their business for funds.
A percentage of their business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, you see people exit. Like, what's the name of that? Silicon Valley. You know, when when Richard, you know, when they got all that funding and then Richard had to exit, you know, they voted him out as CEO.
Yeah.
And made him
I think
CTO.
That's pretty interesting, too. It's like you can be the CEO of a company, but yet those that are on the board or have a percentage do have a say. So if they don't feel like you're equipped to be the CEO, there is a possibility of you forcefully being removed from that position.
Yeah, and that's the danger. You know, I think that's one of the things that people need to focus on if you have a startup is ensuring that you will remain in power.
Agree. You know? Especially if it's like your idea and it's new, it's innovative, and it's something that's never been done before. You want to do everything that you can to protect your position within the company.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a company, I won't say their name, but they were evaluated pretty high. They got a few million. And then their CEO was ousted, you know. So it's not, it's a very common thing to happen, you know, mm-hmm. to.
It is, especially in the startup world. Very, yeah, very common.
Especially as a CEO.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's a really good thing that they're able to hold on to a bit of their, you know, a bit of their power.
Right.
So.
And speaking of CEO, we're going to talk a little bit about a new emerging technology somewhat. So Michael Polsky, who was an immigrant that migrated to actually Detroit, Michigan from Russia, he is the founder of Invenergy, and it's a company that is solely focused on renewable energy. So for those of you who may not know what renewable energy is, it is an energy that's collected from Earth's natural resources, you know, such as like sunlight, rain, waves, tide, and geothermal heat, but also biomass. And biomass is still up for debate. And that's the energy that you get from living plants and organisms. So, you know, that's been debatable. But, you know, he's like seeing changes within how we're getting electricity and empowering different things through the environment. But there's also a lot of scrutiny, I guess, or debate behind, you know, his plans for the future. He was just featured in Forbes because of his progression within the industry, especially considering where he came from.
Yeah. I think it's more the aggressive approach that he's facing, more of the, you know, the fight. I don't think it's any surprise that renewable energy is the most efficient right now as far as cost.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for renewable energy to really take off, they need land.
Correct.
You know,
but with that comes so much. I mean, you're going to need a lot of land.
Yeah. And you have to kind of drill your pipes and everything that you need through existing. So in this instance, farmers,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you have to get farmers to allow you to kind of plow through their land so that you can send the energy that you're gaining from your windmills to, you know, like the urban cities and everything.
Mm-hmm. So farmers really aren't, you know, necessarily on board with this.
No. There are a few farmer testimonies. And I mean, they sound like horror stories. So, mm-hmm. you know, like a couple farmers, they're already allowing some of our current energy pipes. Let's see. I think it might be oil pipes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're allowing them to go through their land, and it's drying up the dirt. You know, it gets right. so hot that it dries up the dirt and they can't use it.
So with tax breaks and, you know, considering that wind and solar power are cheaper than fossil fuels, what are your thoughts on that? Because there's, to me, with this topic, there's so many pros and there's so many cons. Obviously, it's better to power things using the environment, but it's also very strenuous on the environment and not necessarily the best idea. So how do you feel about renewable energy overall?
I think it's a move in the right direction. I don't think that we should have solar fields, though.
Why not solar fields?
I think renewable energy is more useful in a individual aspect mm-hmm. where, you know, there's a lot of companies who put solar panels right on to your rooftop.
Right.
You know, I think that is the most effective way to get energy. But, you know, this is a capitalist market. People are looking to make money. And these farms, you know, like you have to have these huge windmills.
Mm-hmm. Which takes up a lot of land.
Yeah. Not only that, but if you're a bird flying, you know, they chop right through you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's.
It kind of like messes with the ecosystem. Is that what you're?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially bald eagles. You know, bald eagles are an endangered species now.
Right.
So they chop through those. They chop through bats. And I just think slowly we should, you know, integrate it into our system.
Mm-hmm.
But just uprooting everything, I don't think it'll be worth it. I think it's more logical to put solar panels on top of rooftops.
So Michael actually has a renewable energy complex that called Grand Ridge Energy Center, and it's located 80 miles of his Chicago's headquarters, and it contains 140 wind turbines and 120 solar panels. That's enough to power over 38,000 homes. So although it may not be beneficial for farmers, it is beneficial to those in the surrounding area.
Well, I mean, that's a little questionable, because if you're ruining farmlands, it's like, how long before that starts to affect us? You know, because they're the ones who are, you know, giving us food, giving us crops. And
sustaining life, in a sense.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, really. So it's like, how much can we affect them before it starts to affect society? That's my question. And I think there are better ways to do it. So
instead of plowing through someone's land and taking everything, because I know the farmer mentioned in an article regarding Michael and his company for renewable energy, it did state that a farmer was concerned about eminent domain. And that's basically where the government takes your property or the property within that area that's needed for other reasons. So I think that is also another big concern. I don't necessarily agree with eminent domain. I don't think it's fair. But, you know, as you stated, there's kind of cause and effect and pros and cons to everything. So
that's just capitalism. You know, he just wants to make a bunch of money the cheapest way.
Do you really feel that way? I feel like he can make a bunch of money in so many other ways. Yeah. I think this is actually a genuine interest of his.
Yeah. So why do you need all of your turbines in one area? You know, like, why can't you space them out so you don't have to plow through so many people's lands?
Well, I think it's not just this area in particular.
I just don't see why he needs to plow through people's lands, especially when there's technology that you can put a solar panel right on top of someone's roof, you know, and then if that solar panel isn't providing enough energy, then you rely on the
But wouldn't that reduce costs if the solar panels and everything wasn't specifically located on one's property? Like, wouldn't that reduce costs compared to, like, you know, if you're paying for electricity through your city versus you paying either more, an additional amount, or just solely one amount for?
Yeah, well, I think so. The thing about renewable energy is you have to get it from a source, you know. So if there's no wind blowing, you're not going to generate enough energy.
So it's better to have. Well, OK, if it's not solar, but I mean, if it's what? Like if you're, I guess it makes sense to have it in a windy city.
Yeah.
Near a windy city, shall I say?
Yeah, but I think renewable energy is good, definitely. But I think the capitalist approach to it is the wrong approach to it.
Well, you know, our president-elect, Joe Biden, does have a $2 trillion climate plan. And is pledging to install 60,000 wind turbines and 500 million solar panels over the next 5 years to achieve a carbon-free power grid.
Yeah, I think that's good, but
is it because, you know, he's being more progressive about it? It's like, hey, we're going to install this and then we're going to wait. And then, you know, because this is over time. So do you think that's the best approach?
Yeah, because, you know, if you over time, you can strategically place these items mm-hmm. or these turbines so that they can have minimum effect on the surrounding, you know, your neighbors.
Right.
Essentially, you know, like instead of just digging in someone else's land that they pay for and making it essentially useless, because if you're a farmer, you can't put crops on your land, mm-hmm. you know, it's useless. So I think spreading it out, not approaching it with such a capitalistic mindset, mm-hmm. I think would really help, you know, because I would hope that the point of renewable energy would be to help the planet overall and not just be profit driven.
Right. Because, and I do think if, you know, if they even offer, I know with eminent domain, that can be kind of tricky. But I do feel as if they include those whose property they may possibly take within, you know, their incentive or their program or whatever it is or their plan. I do think that could help a bit, maybe kind of see what their needs or wants or concerns are and kind of go about things from that standpoint versus like just taking everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of like the fish analogy, mm-hmm. except this in the reverse, you know, like you have a way to go and fish your own fish or catch your own fish, but someone comes and say, hey, we need your boat, you know? So
what do I get out of it?
Yeah. Instead of you having your boat that you can take out and go fishing, we're going to give you fish.
Right.
You know, so is it an even trade? Like, probably not. And I think that is the problem, is that we know that this will be a profit-driven adventure, you know? So I think we should do it. I think we should do it through the government and not through a private business.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, while we're actually on the topic of, you know, fish, food, there's been a new study actually conducted at the University of Tokyo where researchers created a device that allows people to eat virtual food.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So I'm a big fan of SAO, it's just Sword Art Online. And, you know, anyone who's seen that anime, pretty much the premise of that was they got virtual reality to a point where you could feel sun rays, mm-hmm. you know, like the sun shining on you, you could feel it in a game. You could feel, you know, like food, you can experience eating, you know, all those things inside of virtual reality. So I think it's really exciting that we're starting to get to a point where that may be possible.
Right. And I know like with this particular device, it mimics the sensation of sweetness or whatever, was it like flavor or whatever you are willing or want to taste on the tongue by changing the temperature of the device. So if you want to taste something spicy, the temperature increases. And if you want to taste something cooler, the temperature decreases, giving it more of like a minty flavor. And for a texture, I do know that they provide a sensation. This particular device provides a sensation on your jaw muscles, which makes you feel the chewiness or the hardness of whatever item it is that you're looking to consume. So participants did feel as though they were chewing due to the haptic feedback caused by the muscle simulation.
Yeah. So did they mention about the long-term
yeah. effects? No, that's actually something that I thought about as well, because if you're using a piece of machinery to kind of alter, you know, your taste palette, I mean, just kind of adjusting how you normally get the sensation of food or how you taste food, then it has to have a long-term effect on it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I know this might be a little far-fetched argument, but, you know, when people get electrocuted by lightning,
mm-hmm.
you know, it sends so many electro vibrations or so much electricity through the nervous system
mm-hmm.
that it kind of shuts off areas.
Right.
So I'm kind of wondering if that's a possibility with this, because, you know, we don't really know what we're doing when it comes to electrocuting our nervous system.
Correct.
You know, it takes one time, you know, mm-hmm. to give too much and you could cause who knows what danger. But I think it's definitely interesting, though.
I can't necessarily say this is like very sanitary. I'm not sure exactly if they were literally licking the computer screen, but it didn't seem very sanitary, especially considering everything that's going on. So I think there's like a lack of sanitation there within the process, but also, you know, just messing or, you know, with that sensation, that feeling and your taste palate, I don't think that's a good thing. But I do feel like it could be a good thing, because the side effects of COVID-19 are, you know, it's losing your taste buds. So do you think that they could use this machine in trying to combat that? Or maybe study it to see exactly what's happening? Or, I mean, you know, typically when you conduct studies like this, if you don't get a definite answer, you're going to get more questions, which will eventually lead you to an answer to either what you were, your hypothesis, or anything else that, you know, may come about during the study.
Yeah. So I think if they chose to go in that direction, they could, but I would assume that they are thinking that COVID would be ending soon, or there'll be some type of vaccine for it. I think they're really aiming for the future of gaming, or even possibly
a virtual world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so too. Cause I mean, why else would you want to, you know, eat food that's not really there? But they did say that one of their, you know, goals is to help people cut back on sugary drinks and food. And I do see that as a good thing, because that's definitely needed.
Yeah.
But then it could also cause things like, you know, eating disorders. And that's not good, obviously. Like someone could say, oh, well, I'm just going to eat virtual raspberry pie or virtual meat or even, you know, instead of consuming meat, you may want to eat beans or something. But instead of eating food, you're going to be eating virtual food, causing you to not actually eat. So I think it could aid into that, you know, eating disorders, but it also is helpful. So I feel like there's, like I said earlier, pros and cons to everything. So there's definitely some things that I feel like they may need to think more about or investigate.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of reminds me of, actually the sequel. Yeah, the sequel to this book actually just came out.
What book was
recently.
It?
So the sequel to Ready Player One.
Ah, okay.
So are you familiar with that movie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so with that movie, it was a dystopia where essentially people, like the real world was unappeasing and people started living in the virtual world. So,
I mean, we're kind of already there to one extent.
Yeah, I'm... You know,
especially maybe. Being under quarantine, you're like forced to, you know, kind of you know, be on the computer more, just like watch TV more, or I don't, even TV, watch movies, you know, like on platforms like Netflix and Hulu and Apple TV and things, but you're forced to just really do things that are technology driven.
Yeah. And I get that, you know, I think this technology, I think it will really benefit, you know, for the good, mm-hmm. you know, in case you have like diabetes or maybe you can't eat red meat anymore.
But you want to taste it. Yeah. Just to kind of fill that void. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But I think, you know, the capitalist market that we're in, it probably
seems like you have a lot to say about capitalism.
Yeah. Hey, you know, so I think capitalism is good, but what happens is people abuse the system.
Yes.
And they turn capitalism to bad. Be bad. Capitalism demands workers and mm-hmm. it demands boss.
Right.
And when a boss starts stealing from the workers, I think that's where...
That's when it becomes problematic.
Exactly. You know, because there's only so much wealth on this planet, you know, and we should share it.
Right.
You know, but when someone develops a way to not share it and comes up with ways to not share it, mm-hmm. I think that's where a problem begins, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. That makes a lot of sense. But all in all, like I said before, more than once, there's pros and cons to everything. So whether it's, you know, Airbnb going public, using renewable energy or eating virtual food, I do feel like there's good things and there's also bad things. To be honest, I'm kind of on board with everything as of right now. I would have to do more research, obviously, to make a complete or final decision. But I do see the good sides of things that may not look, you know, promising.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when it comes to energy, mm-hmm. I'm a Tesla guy. You know, I personally feel like energy should be free.
Right.
But, you know.
I mean.
History favored Edison.
Yeah. I mean, look at ice. Like, really think about it. You're buying ice from the store and literally it's just frozen water. But imagine someone's making so much money literally off water. That's something that you can get from anywhere. So I feel like there's always, maybe not in the middle of a desert, but I mean, water is pretty accessible. There's always ways to make money. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Capitalism.
Here we go.
This has been another episode of Technically Surveyed. I'm Sincere.
And I'm Vale.
Be sure to follow us on social media @Technically Surveyed on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube.